What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 26th, and yes, we are going to talk about baseball, and specifically Conray, because I know the pun, the Ray deal, is really the real deal, and that's not really how you say his name, but the point of the matter is that this is the deal that Cubs fans have made, that they lost Justin Steele, and they got replaced by a guy that went 5 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. He looked just like Justin Steele, at least in the line, against the Phillies, which is a really tough matchup and everything. And, is this actually going to stick? Is this a deal that we want to make? Like, yes, we're fine with this. No, we're not. It's kind of a gold star here because Colin Ray has not had a high pitch count prior to this game, so we didn't expect him to throw 92 pitches. 5 innings, though, did feel like the cap anyway, but 5 base runners, 7 Ks, no runs, my gosh. Against the Phillies, I think he got away with one a bit here. The four-seamer is not that good of a pitch. It's actually, I would say, one of his worst pitches. However, 41% CSW with 4 over 49 whiffs in this one. A lot of called strikes on it. I think it's not a thing we should be expecting moving forward, especially against good teams like the Phillies. So if you want to roll with it, I get it, because you get the Pirates next for Colin Ray. That can absolutely work and can be a stream, but it's more of a question of if Colin Ray actually has enough in the tank to make this work. We've seen it before. I don't really actually think he's pitching at that peak that we've seen in the past, though. So it's not as safe of a stream against the Pirates, but fine. We just had this good start. Forget everything I'm saying. Just say, you know what? He did well against the Phillies. Surely he's going to go into PNC Park and have a good time. Colin Ray. Okay, fine. Seth Lugo, 8 innings of 0 runs with 8 strikeouts against the Astros, 4 base runners. My gosh. I do not think that he's going to have the same kind of season that he did last year. But honestly, if you drafted Seth Lugo, you should be pretty happy with this. He is a holly. A reliable strikeout, an inning arm that will go 6 innings constantly and not destroy your ratios. That's what a holly is. It's not an ace level, but he's someone you're holding the entire year and you don't see a ton of volatility with him. That's Lugo. Enjoy it. Shane Boz, though, is turning into an ace in front of us. When against the Padres, came back after a disappointing game against the Yankees to go 7 innings of 0 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. 9 whiffs, 33% CSW. The four-seamer was at 96-97. We love that. Sure, not 97-98, but that's absolutely good enough. And then against right-handers, really kept that ball upstairs with the curve landing down. Against lefties, though, it was a little bit worse. The changeup wasn't as good as we've seen. The curveball and four-seamer were a lot in the middle, height-wise. That is YM lock location, Y middle location. And I think that's going to be better moving on, and he still did well here against the Padres. I love this. You just keep starting Shane Boz as we do start talking about aces going to ace potential here inside the top 20. Speaking of aces going to ace, Paul Skenes destroyed it with 18 whiffs against the Dodgers for a Gallows Poles. 9 Ks in 6.1 innings of 0 runs. That's good stuff. Nathan Eovaldi's killing it. He did against the Giants, got the win. He's also a holly like Lugo. 6 innings, 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks. The curveball is definitively better than it was last year. It's a much higher swing strike rate, much higher strike rate. It has a little bit different movement. It is just a better pitch than we saw last season. And now it makes it a 4-pitch mix of fast four-seamers, cutters, splitters, and curves. You got to dig with Eovaldi. Everything is great here. Jose Berríos, my gosh, against the Yankees, 5.1 innings of 0 runs. Yeah, I know. 5 over 89 whiffs. That's not sustainable. All right, for Berríos, just in general here, I do not want to continue rolling with this. He got the good graces of Koufax to get through this one. That is, he had a good amount of BABIP luck is what that means. Michael King against the Rays. Yep, he got a King Cole. Pretty, you know, apropos there. 38% CSW with 9 strikeouts and 5 base runners, 0 runs in 5 innings. A little bit inefficient, and it's more so because the sinker was fouled off a lot. But he had 9 over 33 whiffs on the four-seamer, which is crazy because when you think of Michael King, you think of a guy that has a good command sinker, a slurve, my gosh, I want to say sweeper and curve, and I did that. I just did it naturally, my gosh. It's a sweeper against right-handers that is really good, and then a changeup that is devastating to left-handers. And the biggest weakness we could say was that he didn't have a good fastball against lefties. He would go front hip, which is he's one of the rare guys that does that. But he always won a good four-seamer against him. Well, now he has it. It's there. It's the four-seamer. He has 4 unbelievable legit pitches now. Michael King is a stud. And I mean, I was trying to say it in the preseason a bit. I had him inside my top 10, and then I got convinced out of it because, I don't know, I was pretty much just saying to myself, like, look, he isn't, he can go into these stretches where he doesn't have that command, and he didn't in his first start. I said, fine, I'll have him like 13 or so. But Michael King is that guy you want him to be. He generally is more than a five-inning guy. He's a quality start volume arm who gets a 25 to 30% strikeout rate. Michael King, my gosh, you're so good. Carlos Carrasco is only here to get you wins. And guess what? Five innings and zero runs. This is it. Oh, man. Like every one in every three starts or something like that, you might get a win from Carrasco. And three hits and two walks and two strikeouts, and you didn't get a win because Barrios was on the other side. That's too bad. Logan Gilbert against the Marlins. This seems like a match made in heaven. Well, it was for three innings of three Ks and of perfection. And then he got pulled with forearm tightness. Talk about a swing of emotion of just, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And then bam, just now we're terrified for the rest of the season. Don't know. No updates so far. And it feels so wrong for the Mariners to have both George Kirby and Logan Gilbert out of that rotation. It's like everybody was saying forever, oh, the Mariners need to steal a starter. And it makes kind of sense because they had a full rotation of Castillo and Wu and Bryce Miller, etc. But the pushback I was having, when you understand why Seattle Mariners, so too many M's in nautical theme, was that you didn't have any depth. Casey Lawrence came in here. You don't want that. Emerson Hancock and Logan Evans and Yonathan Diaz, like that's it after the five. We're not even talking like the Yankees' lack of depth, which was number six is Will Warren, and then it's Carrasco and, you know, Marcus Stroman, and even that is, you know, whatever. That's the situation with the Mariners. So it's why they didn't deal them. And now they're in this really rough situation. Oh my gosh. It does also bring a thought about these young arms, like the next wave of dominant starters, like the next generation that we keep saying, right? Like Logan Gilbert and George Kirby. They're both pretty much like 2-3 years removed from them getting pushed, right? The first time. And they're both hurt at the moment. Something to think about of defining what is a workhorse that, Logan Gilbert was like the workhorse, right? For your fantasy leagues entering the year. Something to think about a lot of just how much we value those innings and how difficult it is as fantasy analysts to decide who to draft based on expected volume. That's all. But hey, maybe Logan Gilbert is fine. Wouldn't that be awesome? I sure hope so. Two first names, though. You can't trust it. Gilbert is a first name. Godfrey. Okay. Tyler Gilbert also pitched. Well, he opened. It was one inning, zero runs for Sean Burke. 5.1 innings of 300 runs. 5 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks for the White Sox. 10 whiffs, 29% CSW, blah, blah, blah. He's still at 94. And 4 for 36 whiffs on the curve and slider. So it's just annoying, right? We can see how it does work. We saw it in September, and we're not seeing it now. That's it. That's just, we do not go for this. It's also on the White Sox, which is, you know, fine for Shane Smith, but even then it's like, okay, what is the White Sox? Jake Irvin is someone you should be adding to all your teams if you haven't already, but he gets the Phillies next. I don't care. I put out this tweet kind of thinking about Jake Irvin, where he went 7.1 innings of 1 run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts here. But the thing is, he dominated in his last two as well. In two ago, he had this great outing with his curveball. I think actually maybe it was three ago he did two and then hinted at it. And then I was like, oh man, maybe actually the next start we want to stream this. I believe he got the Pirates and it was great. And then we got Coors after. So I said, all right, Jake Irvin, we're going to go for you for this one game against the Pirates. But then of course it's Coors we go. So he dominated Coors. And what I put out the tweet, I said, yeah, I think I overrate the weight of the opponent of the pitcher a little too much at times, where I'm not taking into account the fact that, yeah, Jake Irvin's killing it right now. And yeah, it's Coors. It lowers the chance of success, but you can still be successful if you do the thing that you're doing that demands success, right? And I got to be thinking about that a little bit more. There are a lot of times that, like, you know, Boz was facing the Padres yesterday. You might have thought after the Yankee game, oh, no, that's a tough offense, too. I don't want to maybe take a step back. Like, no, it's Shane Boz. You should trust that he's not going to be the same guy he was against the Yankees there. You should start him there, right? Every team can be good, and every team can be bad. that is the worst offenses can destroy you, and also the best offenses can do nothing. So keep that in mind a bit. I'm trying to be a little bit better in my daily rankings about it, but I did start Jake Irvin here. You should too. The curveball is so good. The extension's over 7 feet. He's doing all the things that we saw last year that made us excited about Jake Irvin. So we want to continue this moving forward. Matthew Liberatore against the Brewers. Is he someone that we want to hold on to after this? He's had some hype recently, and I'll talk about Matthew Liberatore and more after this break. So Matthew Liberatore against the Brewers got the win, 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 4 Ks. Velocity's fine, 94 to 95, that's cool. It was around that last time, like slightly lower than this. It was slightly higher than this last time. The slider and the cutter are there now. So the slider used to be this big one against lefties, then he started to introduce into righties. But now he's actually split off to be a cutter and a slider, which is fine because the cutter was really effective against lefties, so that's okay. My bigger question is if the fastballs, that is the four-seamer and the sinker, are commanded well enough, and if the curve is good enough and really not a change there. So righties, are you still going to be good enough moving forward to be a back-end 12-teamer guy? I think so. I want to start Liberatore against the Reds next time out. I'm not going to overthink this. If Liberatore is going to do his good stuff, and that's great. Just keep in mind that I don't really see Liberatore turning into a top 30 stud is all I'm getting at here. Hammer in the point I was making with Jake Irvin about look at the ability of the player and not necessarily the matchups. The perfect example is actually what's happening today with Yusei Kikuchi, who's going into Twins. We think, oh, Twins are easy, so where we keep going with Kikuchi. I even said that in the roundup. I was like, I don't really like what Kikuchi's doing, but the matchups are too good and he's been okay, so fine, you do it. Yeah, he got destroyed, right? And that makes so much more sense to me. I'm like, oh, of course Kikuchi didn't do well. And I should have been better in that, right? Still wasn't a fan of it, but also I said probably start, I think, at the end of it. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I don't really think that Kikuchi is that good. That's the whole point. So I let you guys down with that. I'm trying to be better. Yoshinobu Yamamoto against the Pirates. Easy one, right? 5 innings, 1 run, 5 Ks, but 4 walks. And this is kind of what I'm getting at. It's like, if you're going to pitch poorly, you're going to pitch poorly. It doesn't matter against the Pirates or not. 9 base runners. So it's a dusty donut. And I loved seeing him go 1-2 four-seamer upstairs for the whiff. And it was perfect. And he only did 2 whiffs over 32. Do more of that. He barely went upstairs. Chris Sale, at least he went 1 earned run. The first time all season long that Chris Sale has had under 2 earned runs. And it was 5 innings. He still hasn't gone 5.1 the entire year. It's annoying. He is doing the right things with his four-seamer, the sweeper, really slider, and changeup or not. That's it. We keep going with it. I think that Chris Sale should be better. So that was against the Diamondbacks. Got the win, 5 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 4 Ks. Justin Verlander, I think what he's doing is good. Went against Texas, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 5 Ks. I actually don't think he pitched as best as I've seen in this one. The slider and four-seamer are at the velocities we want, which is 88 or higher for the slider, and then 94 to 95 on the four-seamer. But not the best command of them, really. And he gets Rocky Road next, so it should be better. And also, that's going to be just so much fun. Kodai Senga is doing fine. We're okay with fine. He should be a Holly. 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 5 Ks. Everything is fine there against the Nationals. Pablo Lopez came back from his injury. And I said go for it because it felt like he wasn't going to get limited. But I didn't expect like 101 pitches. My gosh. He only went 5 innings. Why is that? Because he kind of didn't have good command on his 4-seamer curve and changeup. His 4-seamer had a low strike rate, which is very strange. And the sweeper was really good against right-handers and was a right-handed heavy lineup. So that's nice. But he gets the Guardians next, which is left-handed heavy. So hopefully the changeup command comes back and he can take down lefties because he can't be the sweeper there. That's 5 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks for Pablo Lopez. Hayden Wesneski is someone that I've had some helium for a little bit because I thought, oh man, near 7 feet extension, that hovers around there. He has some tools he is figuring out against lefties and he has this really good sweeper and a good situation for the Astros. The thing is, we haven't really seen those left-handed tools come together. And the fastball four-seamer just isn't good, even though it's at 6.8 extension, which is not 7. It's not quite at that threshold of like, oh man, okay. It's just bad otherwise. So at 93 and just nothing else. 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 1 strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? Is the result of this Hayden Wesneski start against the Royals. I'm out. This is a sweeper-only kind of guy at this point. And I'm not saying that he can't develop into more. You know, the things that I saw previously in the season could be there and then grow. But I can't do this in 12 teamers. I have to think that you're better streaming. In 15 teamers, I don't think you have a choice. You got to chase those wins. Chad Patrick, two first names. So he didn't do well against the Cardinals. But seriously, he had a really good game with his cutters last time. It might coax some of you into this one against the Cardinals, but it's not that good of a cutter, and I think he had a fortunate game that time. So 4.1 innings, 200 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, 2 Ks. So what we expect, 4 whiffs, 21% CSW, yuck. Tywin Walker, 3 innings for 86 pitches. I mean, come on. You don't want to do this, but you might actually see him around. Because Ranger Suarez, yeah, sure, he might be come back soon, but then this forearm scare with Christopher Sanchez, I hope he's okay, is maybe going to be a thing, which means Tywin Walker's here. And my gosh, I just wish Spencer Turnbull from last year was still here. Luis Severino got the White Sox, and what do you know? It wasn't that good. It was 6 innings of 300 runs, 8 base runners, 7 Ks. He got 7 strikeouts, but yeah, you're Toby. You know, that's it. He had some terrible sweepers against right-handers. The cutter made up for it, though. But yeah, he's just a Toby. Zach Gallen against Atlanta, 5 innings, 300 runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. He had 11 foul balls on his curveball. He had 13 swings against it. 11 were foul balls, 2 were whiffs, and none were in play, which is so strange to see. It also didn't help with the efficiency here, so 103 pitches in 5 innings. And it's just, okay, if you don't have that doing it, then you have to throw sliders in there a little bit more than you want to. And to his credit, those were better than usual. 4 seamers got a ton of called strikes, but Zach Gallen just isn't cruising. And I'm not saying that he's not able to cruise at all. We've seen pieces of that success throughout his season so far, of like four-seamers being great, curveballs being great, sliders being great, changes being great, etc. But not really all together. And I'm not going to tell you that Zach Allen's just going to be great and he's going to have that month, two-month stretch that's going to make up for everything that you're going through right now. I'm not saying drop him either. But it's tough. He's in that purgatory tier right now on the list, and he's going to stay there. Cal Quantrill got a win in Seattle because Casey Lawrence, after Logan Gilbert came in, allowed a lot of unearned runs, 6 of them to be exact, so 8 total, 2 earned. And Quantrill throwing high cutters against lefties just worked, so he did the Campbell McSanchez for 5.2 innings and 4 earned runs. 5 base runners, 5 Ks, good job, Quantrill, but yeah, we do not want this. Andrew Abbott did not pitch nearly as badly as the line will suggest in course. 4 innings, 4 earned runs, 5 hits, 5 walks, 4 Ks. I think he was close to the zone a lot. He nibbled a bit and it just didn't go his way a bit, but I mean, obviously had some big mistakes too. He's going against the Cardinals next. I think you just kind of go with it and forget about this one. Then you have Kyle Freeland and Kyle Hendricks. I've seen this before of both of them being all the way at the bottom, which if you don't know, the SP Roundup is ranked, that is an order of earned runs allowed. So 6 earned runs and 7 earned runs for Freeland and Hendricks respectively. Yep, that sounds about right. Kyle Hendricks got the Twins. Yeah, I kind of was hoping for a little bit more, but yeah, that's not a thing you want to do. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for listening and reviewing and rating us on iTunes. It goes so far for us, so I really appreciate doing it both for the Plus Pitch podcast feed, individual one, and for the Pitcherlist Fantasy Baseball mega feed as well. Just ratings and reviews, especially the reviews that are kind, are massive when it comes to us working with potential sponsors so that we can do more things and for you and get more tools into your hands. All right, but that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.